The passage itself was no more than 8 feet wide and about the same height, with a slightly curved roof. There were a number of scratches and deeper gouges in the rough stone of the walls.
It doesn't feel right.
Because of the size or the air or what? You feel something else?
I can't quite put my finger on it, lover. Nearest I felt was that dacha in the woods outside Moscow. Not a redoubt.
That would tie in with the possibility that we've somehow jumped to Japan.
I have some thoughts on the chances of this being old Japan.
What?
During the time that the White Coats held me prisoner, I was involved in some of the Totality Concept war games. A large house in Wyoming. Very hush-hush.
What's any of this crap got to do with Japan, Doc?
Oh, a great deal, my dear Doctor. During these games, they would program their computers with all sorts of data for a potential nuclear holocaust. What it might do to the various parts of the world. Needless to say, none of these doomsday scenarios included the possibility that the United States would find itself among the losers.
Japan, Doc.
What about Japan? Oh, yes, sorry. Their prediction for the Far East was that virtually the whole of Japan would be wiped away by quakes and eruptions and swamped by tsunamis, the tidal waves triggered by massive undersea quakes along the known tectonic fault lines.
The whole country destroyed?
They also predicted that there would be some slight damage to California.
Slight damage. California disappeared overnight. Just the western islands there now, with cliffs rising straight up into the big Sierras. Real good prediction, Doc.
As far as Japan was concerned, my somewhat blurred recollection was that they expected massive destruction. Hokkaido at the north would vanish, as would Kyushu and Shikoku in the south. Much of the main island of Honshu lies abreast classic fault lines and would be devastated. Their computer plan showed just the western section of Honshu being spared, with Hiroshima the main center of the population.
It was common knowledge what had happened to the old United States that had become deathlands. Massive structural and climatic changes had taken place, with whole slices of the West Coast falling into the Pacific. Deserts had become mountains, and peaks turned into lakes. But there was little knowledge of what had happened in the rest of the world. Europe was supposed to be a plague-ridden pest hole, covered in rad hotspots, some of them rumored to last for 10,000 years or more.
So, if your White Coats were correct, then we're probably in that bit of Japan that's left. What did you say it was called, Doc?
Honshu, Ryan. The western section of Honshu Island. But I would never place much credence on the diseased frothings of a White Coat.
Me neither, Doc. Rather put my dick in a rattler's mouth.
Nice image, lover.
That's why you love me, babe. Best we get to carrying out a careful wreck. I'll lead the way. Jack, come second, but stay a safe distance back. No way of knowing what we might find once we start to explore.
Ryan started down the passageway, walking along the curving wall, until he came to a small elevator that blocked it off, with a comp control panel set into the wall at its side. The door was closed. 6 digits were neatly printed on the pale concrete at chest height, in peculiarly angular numbering. 6, 2, 8, 3, 4, and 1.
Entry code. Has to be.
Ryan nodded. He looked around in the hope of finding a staircase of some sort that would remove the need to take the elevator, but there was nothing at all.
I don't like it. We get in there, and we're like salmon in a beer keg.
Interesting metaphor. Could go and jump out of here. Then again, maybe we can just go and get ourselves chilled by a band of nice samurai warriors with big swords.
Long as they only got swords, we can chill them first.
One way to find out.
Ryan brought his index finger to the small number pad.
6, 2, 8, 3, 4, 1.
For several seconds, nothing happened. Then, a red light flashed on above the door. Jack pressed his ear to the smooth metal of the door and shook his head.
Nothing.
No sign of how many floors there are in this redoubt. Assuming that it is a redoubt.
Maybe the code simply activates the elevator. And there is some other kind of signal to actually make it go up and down.
Ryan peered at the panel.
Ah, what a bunch of stoops.
Who?
Us. There's 2 arrows on the control panel. One pointing up and the other one pointing down. Yeah, here she comes. Get in and look for something to hold the doors. Quick, Christy.
Christy darted inside the metal cubicle, looking to her left, seeing nothing, and then checking the other side.
Got it. Nice and simple. Door open, it says.
There was just enough room for them all. A neat notice on the back said that the Rumpelmeyer Elevator and Moving Walkway Company of Detroit, Michigan, recommended that no more than 6 adult persons should be on board at any one time, with a maximum combined weight of no more than 1,200 pounds.
Please stand clear of the doors.
Let go of the hold button.
Ryan positioned himself at the front of the cabin, the Sig Sauer steady in his right hand. JB stood at his side, with the Uzi set on full auto, ready to blow away any surprise visitors. It was always difficult to judge the speed of an elevator, except for the effect it had on your stomach. Ryan figured it wasn't going very fast, and it certainly wasn't going very far, either.
Third floor? Lingerie?
Ryan's finger tightened on the trigger of the Sig Sauer, taking up the first pressure. They were in another corridor, but this was much more like something in a small office block. It was painted off-white with a darker ceiling. Neon lights glittered at regular intervals, and doors opened on either side. In neat bronze pots, standing on low bench tables, were a number of tiny trees with twisted branches.
Those are bonsai trees.
Ryan was standing still, listening, gesturing as a sudden afterthought for Christy to again press the control that held the door open. A painting hung on one wall. From where he stood, Ryan couldn't make it out clearly, but it looked like a strange, stylized picture of a foaming wave breaking on a shore. A short distance along the corridor was what seemed to be some kind of shrine. Ryan stepped out into the passage, followed by JB, with the others at their heels. The doors revealed empty offices, most without windows. One had heavy sex-steel shutters across what looked like a casement. Jack slipped in to try it, but shook his head when he found it firmly locked.
Not even a slit to see through.
The shrine was a little altar, recessed into the wall. A tiny statue of a squatting Buddha was at its center, with a few dried flowers scattered in front of it. But most significant was a bundle of rose-scented jaw sticks that were smoking in front of the altar. About a third of them were unburned.
Must have been lit in the last few minutes. The guys who came out of the gateway.
Has to be. Means they can't be all that far away from us.
JB pointed with the barrel of the Uzi.
Exit door.
It was an ordinary door set at right angles to the passage. It looked like white-painted wood, but as soon as Ryan touched it, he realized that it was actually a disguised sec door. At its upper corner, a small sec camera was moving back and forth, a bright green light showing that it was operating.
Anyone watching that'll know we're here. Could mean a reception committee.
Nothing we can do about that. There's no reason for them to expect visitors, so they probably don't have a watch set on the vid screens. It's open.
Looks a good fit. Almost vacuum tight around the edges.
Ryan peered around the corner of the open door.
Still nobody.
They were in a small, brightly lit anteroom, about 10 feet square, with no windows and another disguised sec door facing them at its far side. Doc was carefully examining the door that they'd just passed through.
This reminds me strangely of an airlock. Have you noticed that it has rubber seals all around the edges to make it tight?
Not like any redoubt I ever saw.
Ryan reached for the handle of the second door. With every barrier they reached, it was obvious they were getting closer to the heart of the mystery. Biting her lip, Christy laid a hand on Ryan's sleeve.
We could still go back, lover.
You got a bad feeling?
She shook her head. Ryan noticed that her mane of sentient red hair was packed tightly against her skull, instead of flowing freely across her shoulders.
Not bad, just different. When I can't see clearly, it worries me, Ryan.
We've come this far. Might as well go that last step and see what's what.
JB peeked out past the edge of the open door.
Dark night.
By the three Kennedys. We are transmogrified from a Mat-Trans unit into an ordinary house.
Not many houses got a gateway hidden away in the deep root cellar.
The door opened into a hallway of what looked, as Doc had said, like a perfectly ordinary American house. It was sparsely furnished in a style that seemed a little out of date for the end of pre-dark times, with a three-legged semicircular table holding some dried flowers and a high-backed bench seat with a red padded chair on either side of it. There were a couple of spaces on the wall where the paint was a distinctly different, brighter color, showing that paintings or mirrors had hung there at some time. Ryan could see that the hallway veered to the right in a sharp right angle, and he moved cautiously toward it. He glanced into the open doors on both sides, seeing that the place was more or less fully furnished, though odd gaps showed where things had been moved or removed. JB glanced behind them.
That door used to have a curtain or a tapestry in front of it to hide it.